Radio EcoShock.
American nuclear plant workers are being overworked, some crowded in conditions ripe for the spread of coronavirus. By late April, multiple reactors reported employees infected with COVID-19. The Trump version of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission reacted to the crisis by dropping key safety rules and inspections. Grant Smith is Senior Energy Policy Advisor for EWG, the Environmental Working Group, headquartered in Washington, D.C. Grant Smith, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks for having me.
What got you and Editor-in-Chief Bill Walker looking into nuclear plant operation during this pandemic?
We observe articles every day. We work through energy issues. We try to keep abreast on all the topics and what's happening in the industry. And this was critically important. We've addressed nuclear power in blogs before, you know, the excessive costs, the state bailouts in the United States. You know, five or six states have bailed out the nuclear plants and deregulated states to the tune of like $15 billion. You know, there's been bailouts in the past, $110 billion or so. In the mid-90s when we deregulated and they couldn't compete then. And there's been serious safety concerns ongoing. I mean, this isn't the first one. AP did a series of articles in 2011 describing essentially collusion between NRC regulators, Nuclear Regulatory Commission regulators here, and the industry. And the agency parlance for weakening safety standards was called sharpening the pencil. I mean, that's what the reporters were told in this series of articles. And we're seeing the same modus operandi here with the agency, basically looking the other way, allowing these plants to run, essentially putting the profits and the nuclear technology first before public safety. So this was a huge red flag to us, and, you know, and to many others following this issue. And we always seem to be running on the edge of imminent disaster with these plants in terms of weak safety standards. In the United States, you know, plants are now asking for another 20-year extension of their life cycle, you know, up to 80 years. No other country's doing that. We'll have the oldest fleet on the planet, and there are certain components, critical components, that you can't replace that could cause a serious accident or meltdown. And now, on top of all this, we are continually being shown the vulnerability of these plants from climate change, right? I mean, here in the U.S., when utilities file with the Securities Exchange Commission, you know, that's called a 10-K form, and they describe the risks that they face. And typically, they'll say, well, there's these severe storms, drought, that could impact the operation of our plants. And they're talking about these large thermoelectric plants that are water-cooled, like nuclear plants. And, you know, we've already had examples, I'm sure, where hurricanes on the East Coast, where nuclear plants had to be shut down prior to the storm in hopes that, you know, they won't be damaged severely. Flooding, it takes a week or more to get the things back up and running. They're extremely vulnerable. They're not very resilient in terms of withstanding these types of climate changes. And now, you know, an additional climate risk is the pandemic. You know, the World Health Organization says, hey, these are going to increase, climate change is causing this. And now we have the example of how difficult it is to keep these plants running in the context of the COVID-19 outbreak. So I think this should be an added financial risk for Wall Street to put pressure on these people, and it should be for the federal government as well. You have to add this, and you have to incorporate it into planning. I think the ultimate conclusion is you either don't run these plants or you run them unsafely with infusions of huge subsidies now and again because they're unable to compete with renewables, for instance, with natural gas, which renewables are also competitive with now. And they're just a cumbersome technology. They're not suited well for the coming transition to renewables. They're extremely expensive. They're dangerous to run. And we should start a systematic, rational process to begin phasing them out.
All right. So with the pandemic, if you had to pick just one American reactor with some big concerns, what comes to mind?
Well, you have the Limerick plant in Pennsylvania, Exelon's plant. This is a really egregious example of how the attitude of the industry, the local officials there basically told them, hey, you know, we don't think your safety precautions are adequate to do refueling. We want you to postpone it. They said no. They went ahead. They didn't implement any safety measures until the workers started talking to the press and saying, hey, we're pretty much terrified to work here. People are working on top of one another. There's no safety measures to speak of. They had a pretty significant outbreak initially, you know, like 36 people, and it's unknown now how many more. That's a very bad example. At Fermi 2 up in Detroit, outside of Detroit, they've had over 140 cases. And yet the local DTE, the local utility there, keeps saying, hey, we're taking all these precautions. So it's extremely difficult. You know, you have like 1,500 people that come in working on top of one another practically. And they go from plant to plant. They're itinerant. So they could be spreading this all over the country as well. And since, you know, not a good percentage of people don't even exhibit symptoms, you know, that it could be, you know, just allowing this to go forward could have significant impact on numbers of cases and deaths going forward, considering how many people are involved in refueling these plants, you know, changing out about a third of the fuel every 18 to 24 months.
And that's not just one or two plants. They've got dozens and dozens of them, and they still plan to go ahead and refuel them right during the pandemic.
Yes, they do. There's like 30, a little over 30 this spring, another two dozen in the fall. And the NRC is essentially allowing these guys to work excessive hours, you know, 86 hours a week. The NRC is well aware that in these refueling operations, if there's, you know, equipment failures or problems, it's, you know, a lot of it's due to fatigue. So they already know this. Yet they're allowing this to continue. And what they should do, obviously, is ramp them down. And instead of refueling first, it should be safety inspections first to make sure that they're, when they ramp them back up, they are going to run. And in a lot of regions of the country, particularly out east, they have enormous reserve margins for power, way more than they need. So it's questionable whether these plants are even needed for reliability purposes now, considering, you know, electric demand has dropped, you know, 15% or in that range on average. So, you know, there's all those issues, and this has to do with money and protecting the industry. I mean, nuclear power always gets a pass for some reason, although it's a huge albatross around our net, around our wallets, basically any ratepayer and taxpayer wallet. It's just a huge burden, and with age, they become more and more dangerous to run, and the chances of severe accident increase significantly. In fact, David Lockmalm, who did work for the Concerned Scientists, refers to it, you know, says, you know, this is akin to playing Russian roulette if we allow these plants to run another 20 years.
Yeah, I spoke with David Lockbaum after the Fukushima crisis in Japan, the big accident there. And from the Union of Concerned Scientists, he was one of the voices that I felt we could trust. And you wrote in your article at EWG.org that essential federally mandated inspections of nuclear plants, some of them are now being done from home. Really?
Right. Well, yeah, they basically sent a lot of the inspectors away, and they're relying on company reporting, you know, the plant reporting on itself. So, you know, given the attitude of the industry, the constant spin of the industry about this technology that's far from reality, you know, it's a dangerous proposition.
And tell us about the inspection of steam generator tubes at reactors in Florida and Texas. Why does that matter? Is it dangerous?
These things are critical to cooling the plant, and they need to be, you know, frequently inspected because they're exposed to radiation, extreme heat, vibration. They can fail. And if you have a cascading event, you could have a severe radioactive release or worse. You know, this happened at Indian Point nuclear plant in the past where they said, well, we're going to postpone this inspection, and they had one of these tubes failed. Luckily, it wasn't a cascading failure. It does release some radioactivity in the air, you know. But again, I mean, to defer something like that to me is completely insane. Why would you do that? I mean, why? You know, another major accident, and, you know, the industry's basically a dead duck, right? I mean, who's, At some point, people aren't going to tolerate this anymore.
You would think, although people keep on doing it. Japan wants to reopen some of their reactors after their horrible experience. Grant, some meatpacking plants did not test their employees for COVID-19, and then they did not report cases to local authorities. They're still not reporting some of them. How is testing going in American nuclear plants, and are the results published?
They are not, as far as I can tell. Still haven't found anything at the NRC, and basically it's reporters digging in, or, you know, probably being some whistleblowers at the plant, letting them know. It's very difficult to tell what testing is going on. Of course, a number of utility companies say they're testing, you know, every day and ensuring that their workers are healthy, but you just don't know. Basically, the industry is running itself at this point.
Another watchdog group, the Nuclear Resource Information Service, has warned the NRC is not holding required public meetings and community consultations. Instead, citing the virus, the regulator and the operators are making critical decisions on their own, now in secret. Does that worry you?
Oh, yeah. Anytime you're dealing with a situation like this where, you know, an accident is just a severe accident, it's just a total catastrophe, there should be complete transparency. You have to put in place protocols for dealing with this. I mean, if it appears from reading between the lines that this, they're asking for extension in hours because they know people are going to be sick, right? So they might have fewer workers available, so they're going to have to do that. And to the extent you get to a certain level of workforce or under a certain level of workforce, they should basically power the plant down. In fact, they should keep them powered down now, the ones that are under refueling, until this thing passes. Again, you know, emphasizing that many regions of the country, there's plenty of reserve margin where these plants, or many of them, might not be needed at all right now.
Well, we all know American reactors are really old. I mean, America led the movement into nuclear power. Most of these plants were built in the 1960s and 70s, and then it became obvious it just wasn't cost-worthy to build anymore. They couldn't find investors. So most of these plants are running well beyond their original design life, as you pointed out, and that means they need specialized replacement parts that aren't available off the shelf anywhere, and they need them all the time. But can we count on that supply chain when the pandemic has closed down so much business and industry all over the world?
Well, I don't think anybody's relying on their supply chain at this point. You know, the wind sector has the issues with supply chain. You know, the solar sector. Look at our supply chain with respect to personal protective equipment here anyway. It's awful. So I think across the board you have supply chain issues, and there's no reason to believe that they're not having them as well. I mean, since it's pretty much economy-wide at this point.
And it takes a lot of specially trained people to keep an aging reactor running without accidents. And what have you heard about worker absenteeism in the nuclear industry? Anything?
That's not being projected either, really, you know, reported on to any great extent. So to the extent that these issues keep popping up, you know, people getting infected at the nuclear plants during refueling, you would think that there would be more significant problems. Now, at the one plant that had a lot of outbreak is the Vogtle plant down in Georgia. It's they're building two new reactors. And they've had to reduce their workforce because of the infection rate and slow construction. They're still trying to construct it, of course. So they've had to slow their construction rate. That's going to add tens of millions of dollars or more on top of the billions. Like, it's costing over twice as much as they initially predicted now anyway. And this is just going to increase the cost and slow the construction again. So that issue is critical because not so much in that context, in the context of running the plant, you need a certain amount of people there to make sure that you're not going to have a huge issue.
Well, Georgia was leading America in trying to get the country open. Even Trump was doubtful they were doing it too soon. And so this is the plant where Vogtle is being built. And you say, well, okay, that's not going to cause a nuclear accident because it hasn't even been fueled and opened. But we have to remember that when a lot of these former nuclear plants were built, there were cases of crime involved. There were cases of bad welds. There were inspections that were never done. And so whatever happens now in Georgia could show up 10 or 20 years from now as an accident, and the pandemic will be related to that?
Considering they're really under a lot of pressure to get this thing finished, you could have a lot of problems with the quality of the workmanship, not so much because of the workers, but because they're being pressed to get things done quickly.
With fewer people.
Right.
And fewer inspections. So, look, as you mentioned, even before the pandemic, well before the pandemic, this industry was facing serious financial problems. Now, the owners and investors of these plants have a juicy opportunity, maybe, to get federal bailouts from the trillions wielded by the Trump administration for Corona. Have they cashed in already? Do we know?
I'm not sure. I know the Trump administration's been attempting to bail them out, along with coal plants, through various means. State governments have, you know, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Connecticut, to the tune of billions of dollars. There's no question that they'll be pressing for that, whether it's justified or not. I mean, the utilities are still pretty healthy overall, and to bail out these plants, particularly when you're basically in a recession or worse, you'll see bills skyrocketing, and that's going to create problems, you know, for people affording their electric bills. So this is going to be a huge issue going forward because of the numerous attempts to bail these things out. And in many cases, they're not even needed. It's probably more to do with local tax base and jobs and that type of thing, and not wrecking local economies and actual need for the plants, but they can be replaced. For instance, in Colorado, if a utility company is going to close a coal plant and they're going to replace it with some resource that they're looking at, they basically say, well, now we want you to look at renewables first, energy efficiency, energy storage, and we want to see how much of that investment can get into this local area to help, you know, soften the loss of tax base and jobs. And so there are ways to address these things that don't allow local economies to collapse, that allow for job creation to replace them, and allow for the local economy to continue to thrive, but with other resources that are much more benign.
The business press is reporting that the nuclear industry claims they're under a sustained cyber attack during the pandemic. It's really gone up, and some of their computer systems use decades-old technology that thankfully cannot be accessed from the Internet, so I suppose that's a safety feature. But what happens when hundreds or thousands of other workers are asked to work from home computers?
Well, in terms of the control room, they can't send those people home. They have to be there because of what you said. They're not connected to the Internet. Again, the issue is, are they going to have enough people in the control room to maintain the plant in a safe, running in a safe manner? So I think the big issue is enough on-site staff at this point to ensure that it will run. And that's one of the big advantages of renewables, for instance. You don't need, you know, 1,000 people at a wind farm. You can run them essentially remotely with solar farms, rooftop solar. It just runs. You're not maintaining it. You don't have anybody operating it. When we move to renewables, we're looking at a more resilient system from that standpoint. Again, and with these large power plants, central station power plants, you know, as expensive as they are and polluting, we can move towards moving the source of power near where the power is needed. For instance, in California, because of the fire season now being practically all year round and numerous blackouts occurring to prevent more of them, you know, they're moving to build microgrids in towns. And so you build up a more resilient system that, again, is more resilient overall, but also is more resilient to the changes in the climate we're experiencing. So, you know, there are all sorts of advantages of making this transition as quickly as possible and as smoothly as possible over trying to protect the nuclear industry, which is basically a huge financial failure at this point.
Well, to your point about keeping workers in the control room, the industry admits they do have backup plans to keep workers on their sites 24/7. They would provide them with cots and prepackaged food. Well, now that America has over 1.5 million cases, over 100,000 confirmed COVID-19 deaths, probably more, has that emergency plan been implemented anywhere?
I'm not sure. I assume so. The reporting, the transparency hasn't been great on exactly what's going on at these plants.
I'm not surprised that you're not sure, because I couldn't find out either, and that's because they have actually announced that they're not going to say. So it's a secret operation. I guess it'll leak out eventually that a whole bunch of workers didn't come home, and they're not coming home because they're stuck there at the plant for who knows how long, working what hours. And on another front, there are American-designed nuclear reactors all over the world. Four General Electric Mark I reactors blew up at Fukushima, Japan, following their tsunami in 2011. But now most Americans were flown home during the pandemic, and I wonder if this disease raises worries about other U.S.-type reactors in other countries.
Well, I guess it would depend on the country's capabilities, how many trained people they have, and to the extent that they're still healthy, can they work? If push comes to shove, you can always power it down and just maintain cooling systems and things like that to, you know, keep the plant safe until you're going to ramp it back up. So, you know, this push to constantly run these things, they tend to forget the alternative of, okay, let's power it down, so we're going to play it safe. And when this thing's over, we'll get our people back and have enough personnel to run them safely.
Well, that's what we've had to do personally, you know, stay home and be safe for a while and until we can get a vaccine or it blows over. But the nuclear industry has not been willing to do that in America so far. And it brings me to wonder that if, God forbid, America experiences a second or third wave of this disease, worse than the first one, as happened in 1918, and the pandemic drags on for months or even a couple of years, can this nuclear power industry hold out? Can they just keep training replacements for their sick and dying workers?
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Well, I think that's a good question, and I would say it's foolish to sustain this industry when we have these other alternatives that are more affordable, cost-effective, you know, benign, essentially, and create a lot more jobs. So at this point, this is political decision-making. It has nothing to do with the need for the plants. It has nothing to do with nuclear power being critical to addressing climate change, because it isn't. We need to get over this hump in this constant industry spin and regulators looking the other way. I mean, it's not going to be easy, you know, to change that perspective. I think more people are skeptical of nuclear power now since Fukushima. But it'll take a little bit to convince people that, hey, we can do this, and we can do it better. We can address climate change much more efficiently, and we can create a lot more jobs for everyone that are actually living wage jobs. So we have to move in that direction. I think Congress, there are people in Congress, obviously, here, the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party that thinks in those terms. When you look at Joe Biden, he is embracing some of the Green Deal components now, for instance, New Green Deal. And hopefully, keep our fingers crossed, we'll see some positive change and start moving towards a more rational energy policy and approach to, you know, furnishing people with electric power.
So as we finish up here, please tell us about the Environmental Working Group and how we can use your news to keep track of the energy scene.
It's EWG.org. You just go to Next Level Energy on the website. It's easy to find. And we have blogs and reports posted there on any number of issues. EWG has offices in California, Washington, D.C., and Minneapolis. It works on a number of consumer issues, very focused on public health with respect to consumer products, for instance, farm runoff from fertilizer usage, focus also on confined feeding operation impacts from a public health and environmental standpoint. We work on energy as well. So it's a broad issue base for the organization, and we can always use folks' help. So please go to the website and read some things. My email is on there. You can find that. And have any questions or anything, fire them to me.
We've been speaking with Grant Smith, Senior Energy Policy Advisor for EWG, the Environmental Working Group. And you can find links to follow up on the things we've been talking about in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Grant, thank you for shining some light in these dark corners. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for your interest.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Grant Smith mentioned the climate threat to nuclear installations. We have a case of that right now. The American Midwest has experienced record-setting extreme rainfall events. The city of Chicago just had its wettest May for the third year in a row. All that rain burst two dams in Michigan, as you heard. It flooded out the city of Midland, population 42,000. It also engulfed the Dow Chemical plant that has produced noxious chemicals for years, including Agent Orange. The company acknowledges their chemicals have leaked out over the years. It has been declared a Superfund site, among the worst in the country, requiring federal cleanup funds. There are chemicals lining the river, now being stirred up by the flood and washing down into Lake Michigan. What is less reported is the Dow nuclear reactor at that flooded site. It is a smaller research reactor built in the 1960s called a Triga 1 model. The reactor is sunk down in the ground. It doesn't have cooling rods, but depends on convection for water cooling. Although the reactor was not operating at the time of the flood in late May, the design suggests it probably still had nuclear materials inside. Are they now leaking out into the river and Lake Michigan? So far, the company says no. With no federal oversight reporting we can rely on, you just have to take the word of Dow Chemical that this reactor is perfectly safe during this extreme rainfall event. Nothing to worry about here. Beyond nearly 400 very large nuclear power plants in the United States, there are thousands of smaller reactors scattered around the country. They are at universities, military bases, and private companies. Who is keeping track of those as climate change and a pandemic come knocking at the door?
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.